We could just give men contraception and alter their hormones. And they were like, oh, you couldn't. That might fuck them up. The female body has never, ever been studied. Every single cell in our body, down to every single medication we've ever taken, has been built, tested and tried on men, male bodies, male cells.
What's the impact of this?
Women are more likely to die, more likely to have adverse reactions to drugs, more likely to have their pain dismissed. Every bit of our bodies is wired differently, created differently to create life.
Can you give me and everyone listening, like, what do I need to know? Welcome to this episode of Motherkind. It is me, your host, Zoe, and we are proudly sponsored by Wild Nutrition's women's supplements. I think so many of us have spent years feeling frustrated by our bodies. We judge them, push them, ignore them, and often wish that they were somehow different. But what if our bodies are actually trying to tell us something? In this episode, I am joined by Helen O'Neill, reproductive scientist and founder of Hertility, who is on a mission to help women better understand their hormones, cycles, and health. What I just absolutely loved about this conversation is that it's not really about fertility, it's actually about something bigger. It's about understanding ourselves. So we talk about the incredible intelligence of the female body, how our hormones can shape our energy, emotions, and mental well-being, and why learning to tune into what's happening throughout our cycle can be such a powerful act of self-awareness. This conversation just really reminded me how extraordinary our bodies are. So if you've ever felt disconnected from your body, confused by it, or simply curious to understand yourself on a deeper level, you are going to love this episode. Don't forget to share and subscribe. Here it is. Helen, I'm so excited to be chatting to you, and I have done so much research, and what you are doing is just phenomenal. But I want to start with asking you, what is one thing that you wish every woman knew about her body?
That it is the most powerful weapon that can protect both you and your children just through adaption, immunology, all of these things. Our bodies are so understudied, but they are so powerful.
When you say understudied, what do you mean?
Oh, how long have we got? The female body has never, ever been studied. Down to every single cell in our body, down to our genetics, down to every single medication we've ever taken has been built, tested and tried on men, male bodies, male cells. So when we even look at some of the scientific repositories that us scientists use to benchmark, almost like if you want like a dictionary that you would use to compare words or look up words, we use certain types of dictionaries, but they're for proteins that are in our bodies or genes that are in our bodies. And the current global database for all of the proteins, fewer than 4% of them are female-derived tissues. So we use the male form as the gold standard. Yeah, I know. There are no words.
There are no words.
There are no words. And
yet, it was only in 1993 that women got included in clinical trials, right?
And even then, it was a one or two here and there.
What's the impact of this? What do you, you know, you're speaking to women day in, day out. What is the lived impact?
The lived impact is that women are more likely to die. Women are more likely to have adverse reactions to drugs. Women are more likely to have their pain dismissed, not get a diagnosis, not get a prescription. There is no prescription for them. It's almost hard to put to words the impact of our complete negligence of and neglect of women as entirely separate biological entities.
It's amazing that we're not all revolting on the street, isn't it?
I'm trying to rally. it's like this blind spot.
Yeah,
and nobody sees it. And once you start to see it and start to unravel this tapestry of like wrong, you think, oh my God, why is everyone not talking about this? Like I spoke with the chief scientific officer of one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world. And I said, you know, this is This is a big problem, and it's an even bigger problem when we take into account that AI is now building systems that are going to lock in those errors and compound them forever. And he's like, ooh, it's a bit embarrassing. I was like, embarrassing isn't the word. Like, shocking is the word. But yeah, it's it. When we think about what our bodies can do, we are the creators.
Yes.
Our bodies create life. We feed, we nurture, we carry. Every bit of our bodies is wired differently, created differently to create life. And we don't understand the majority of that power.
God, I've actually just given me chills, because imagine if some of these huge challenges, endometriosis, infertility, imagine if they were actually, well, imagine if they were a male issue, right?
Well,
the,
I always
the
say
difference in funding, it would be solved by
it
now.
Would be solved. I went to a massive conference recently, and they had free prostate screening exams on the fifth floor for every male participant, and they were giving away bookmarks from prostate screening association or whatever it is, and they were boasting that they'd raised $1 billion for prostate cancer. And I just thought, like,
which is great, but
no, that's fine.
Where's,
but yeah, that's less than the budget that was given for. I mean, meanwhile, the Women's Health Strategy had raised $500,000 and spent a year trying to do it. So, the disparity is sickening when we think about it.
And you're fighting the good fight, because well, you are leading this reproductive revolution. Really,
that's what we call it.
Tell us.
We call it the mother of all movements.
I love that. I love that. Tell me, what was the seed that sparked that idea?
I'd say many seeds over my scientific career that sparked it. I often say, like, scientists are supposed to have eureka moments. I think I had a what the fuck moment where I did my master's in prenatal genetics and fetal medicine. So everything to do with how we're formed is in the earliest of embryos. And I was so consumed with, like, how incredible this was, that every one of us had derived from, like, a single cell that had split and divided. And I thought, why wouldn't everyone be obsessed with knowing this information? We all started there. We all began as embryos that implanted in our mother's wombs. And then when I did my PhD, I studied the differences between ovary formation versus testis formation. So that sexual dimorphism, in other words, the binary, male or female, when it came to our chromosomes, our genes, our ovarian formation, our hormones, our genitalia, all of that was so divided depending on the signals that we were given. And so that, again, further compounded this differentiator between how our cells can act so differently, but perform different tasks based on their environment. And then it just surprised me so much that when it came to preclinical studies, huge human trials, that we just chose the male, because the female was a little bit too hormonally noisy to study. So we'll just leave her out. And I remember asking somebody in a seminar, did you check whether the brains of these animals were male or female? Because I know they are very different. And they said no. And I just thought, I can imagine this study is entirely redundant, because you're just missing out on key signals. But I think really what drove it home was when I was lecturing master's students and medical students all about female reproductive anatomy, physiology, all of these things, and felt completely in the dark about my own body. Like, when you educate people about something you feel so passionately about, and then you all of a sudden start to ask questions about your own body and are completely in the dark, and yet have the liberty of having world-class experts at your doorstep that you could ask these questions of. I thought, if I'm confused about my own fertility, my own hormones, I have no clear direction as to where to go. I know I can't go to the GP and simply just inquire without a reason for being there. I know I don't want to go to a fertility clinic because I am not infertile, or am I? Am I the one in six? All of these questions really started to consume me, because I thought, you know, if I'm so educated around this and so in the dark, how does anybody else navigate this journey? And that's really why I created Fertility.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I feel the same way. And I think the fact that we are in the dark means that you outsource your power a little bit. Like yeah. everyone, when I was how old, sort of 15, 16, 17, everyone was going on the pill and I was like, okay. Everyone just went on the pill in my generation.
What's amazing is you never questioned it.
Never questioned it.
Never
questioned it. Doctor prescribed it. They were like, it's good for your skin and some other stuff. And everyone took it.
And the weird thing about this is when you play a thought experiment about switching it over and you say, well, we have a very complex calculus of hormones that are changing every single month. And when we take hormonal contraception, we're really trying to mess around with or, you know, modulate a whole slew of hormones in order to prevent a pregnancy. And then you think, well, actually, we could just give men contraception and alter their hormones. And I remember saying to somebody, well, men only have one hormone, testosterone. Why wouldn't we just kind of suppress that to a certain extent? And they were like, oh, you couldn't. That might fuck them up. And I was like, and here we are, perfectly fine to mess around with a young teenage
body,
girl's
yeah, developing body,
developing hormones, but definitely don't do it to a boy.
What can you give me and everyone listening, like a hormone sort of 101? Like, yeah. What do I need to know? My little girl is 10. We're having lots of conversations about, you know, hormones and body changes. What also do I need to be talking to her about?
I think it's unfortunate that we decide that hormones are just to do with reproduction and that they're just for girls. I think having a broad conversation about girls and boys being driven by hormones, at the end of the day, testosterone is one hell of a hormone that is responsible for a lot of damage, both sexual and physical violence. So I think talking about hormones as if... you know, men are very hormonal, but we only ever say it to women.
True. So true.
We weaponize
hormones.
We never
see an angry man and say, oh, someone's he's hormonal.
Exactly. And we should. So I think evening out the idea that hormones, because when you think about our hormones, they dictate mood, weight, skin, appetite, energy, metabolism, all of these different things. Adrenaline is a hormone, right? And so I think when we talk about them, it's better to talk about them across the board mm-hmm. and the power of their function in all of our body. Even our wake sleep cycles are governed by hormones. You know, you have your melatonin that rises in the evening and falls then in the morning. So that is a good way of kind of talking about it. So it's not just talking about reproduction and reproductive function and periods. Nonetheless, when we do talk about those things, when we talk about the menstrual cycle, that is this month where we have like a roller coaster of hormones. And
you're
the reason
you're telling me.
Yeah, yeah, we do. we're all belt and braces
just
here.
Just white knuckling.
But I think if you are belt and braces, at least you can prepare. And I think that is a huge thing, is preparation for what your body is doing and acknowledging the differences. So I always say we acknowledge the difference between night and day and what our ability is during the day when you're raring to go versus in the middle of the night where you would take, yeah. you know, you need sleep.
Yeah.
Our body needs different things from one end of the menstrual cycle to the next. So at the earliest, the first few days of your menstrual cycle, your menstrual cycle starts the day you bleed. So day one is when you're bleeding. And it's everything is kind of at a baseline then. It's why women sometimes say, oh, finally my period is here. I start to feel normal.
Yeah, it's quite a relief that first
there
bleed.
There you go. And then at that whole phase is called your follicular phase. And that follicular phase is essentially when all of the follicles or immature eggs are getting ready to mature. And so you get a rise in follicle stimulating hormone or FSH. And actually estrogen is rising as well. So all
is that when you feel good?
That is when your body is getting ready for ovulation. And so ovulation is that midpoint when the egg is released. But from day one of your period all the way up to that, your body's like, I'm getting ready. she's going to be fertile. And so it is linked with so much of your energy, your mood, your metabolism, your skin, the way your brain function.
Yeah.
Your cognitive ability, you're sharper. And it's because when we talk about estrogen, we typically talk about it to do with our ovaries and all feminine things, as opposed to estrogen being this incredibly potent and powerful hormone that is in every part of our body. We have estrogen receptors all over our bodies, from our eyes to our brain, to our ovaries, to our skin.
Which is why the menopause symptoms affect our whole body, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So when we move our associations with hormones away from simply being reproductive.
Yeah.
And we think of them as being chemical messengers in every part of our body. We start to pay a little bit more homage or femage to them.
Okay, so we've got carry on with the cycle because I'm locked in.
Peak. And then your body releases an egg, typically, and the egg will wait to be fertilized. And when it doesn't get fertilized, our body again sends signals, and then you start to see this crash of estrogen. And that's really when you start to feel like angrier and then sadder. And the process starts all over again. And it's incredible that our bodies every single month will do this process, assuming, waiting for us just to procreate. But our bodies never in throughout history and evolution would never experience so many periods. Like, women of today have far more periods than women of hundreds of years ago, because they would get pregnant. They would breastfeed for much longer amounts of time and then get pregnant all over again. So they would spend much more of their life in pregnancy and lactation, and therefore not cycling, than we do now.
God, that's amazing. I never thought of that. And you say that one third of women will face, well, you don't say this, it's one third of women will face reproductive health issues.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, when you think about that complex cycling of hormones that go up and down, and also the physiological things that are happening. Your uterus is building up a lining every single month. It's like the cushion waiting for the implantation for this baby. And then that doesn't happen and the lining sheds. Of course, we're going to see, you know, interruptions to that process. We're going to see health consequences. So when we think about the most basic of interruptions that our menstrual cycle will face is like stress. It's highly attuned to stress. It's highly attuned to our diet, to our exposures, to our sleep. And so when those things start to compound, that impacts that rhythm.
So is a change in your period almost like an early warning signal?
It's the most unspoken.
Yeah, because I just tend to ignore it. I'm like, oh, that was weird, a bit heavier, or that was weird, a bit shorter. Or
yeah, and I think if more women were attuned to a normal menstrual cycle and say, okay, I feel great because I'm ovulating, or I feel shit because I'm, you know, premenstrual, and say, okay, this will pass, a couple of days, I'll be fine, as opposed to going into it blind and being like, why am I feeling like this? You're like, why am I so angry? And then feeling like, why am I so pathetic? I feel so tired.
I started tracking my cycle for that reason. And I've stopped doing it for just, you know,
you need the fertility app. We put a lot of work into this.
Yeah, okay, I need to get your app. And just last night, I said to the kids and my husband, I was like, I've had a really good day, but I feel like crying. And Guy went, what date is it? Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
It's amazing.
But that,
because we're so busy.
The internal voice in your head whispering, like, it's okay. There's a reason for this.
Yeah.
And that can be very powerful, but also then acknowledging that that is changing over time. And that's why I say being familiar with a regular menstrual cycle is important, because then when things become irregular, you can start to pick apart the reasons why, and it's your body telling you. And when your body does tell you those things, it's doing it for a reason. It's nature's way of saying, you are not in a position right now to procreate, and I'm going to protect you from that by stopping your ovulation, by stopping your periods. And that sounds like a very nice thing, but actually it's a real warning sign that most women ignore. And what we see is that women who've had their periods stop for actually a consistent amount of time because they're over exercising, under eating, or both, or they're completely stressed, they just ignore it. And they're like actually somewhat grateful that their period hasn't come, instead of saying there's a reason for this and I should acknowledge that.
Yeah, it's actually wild when you think about it that way, that it's your body trying to
protect you because it needs to preserve all energy for you. It is not willing to divest any of that energy to procreation.
Gosh, it's just phenomenal, isn't it? What are the big, you know, I think there's a lot of conversation at the moment about women having children later, egg reserves, sperm health, I think, is becoming more and more of a conversation, which is amazing. But from your perspective, what are you seeing as like the big things that you really want people to think about, know and consider around fertility?
I wish every girl, teenage girl who gets her first period, was aware of their menstrual cycle, ovulation, and that actually fertility isn't forever, that we have a set ovarian reserve and that it does deplete over time. Because if you have that message from a younger age, then it doesn't come as a shock to you when you're older and you've been expecting things to work forever. And I think that is where so many people say, you know, why did no one tell me? Like, here I was just, you know, still taking contraception as if I was going to get pregnant any single month, and then they come off it to try get pregnant and it's much harder. I think if we knew at an earlier age that our fertility does decline and it does so at a predictable time, then both the symptoms that we should then anticipate for perimenopause won't come as a shock to us emotionally or physiologically, but equally we'll make preparation for that, and society still has not caught up with that. That's the strange thing, is that our societal expectations of women have changed so significantly,
yes,
faster than in any other time throughout history. I always say her story, that we are now expected to do far more than just get pregnant in our teenage years and get married in our early 20s and have babies for our life and be housewives. That seems so foreign.
Yeah.
And yet it's not so long ago that that is all we were allowed or expected to do. And so now it's almost switched the opposite way, where you have to have not just a job, but a career, an education, a social life, look after your children. You have to meditate, do yoga, freeze your eggs, call your mother. Like, all of these things are lives have become so crowded with the things that we should be doing in order to be perceived as, you know, ticking every single box in life. But it's really put a stress and a strain on becoming a mother. And it's delayed the time that we're expected to do that so significantly, to where we've normalized, and of course it is normal now, but we've normalized the idea of having babies in our late 30s and 40s. But that was historically never really the case, unless you were having them your fifth or sixth or seventh child then. And that's crazy, because obviously our bodies don't pick up on that. And don't get me wrong, I had my second child at 40 and my body did that and I was very grateful. But when we look at statistics generally, our bodies struggle a lot more. And so the consequences to maternal health and infant health can be much more profound when we expect our bodies to do that. And I always say it's like running a marathon. You know, if you were running a marathon in your 20s, you'd expect your body to recover much
more
quickly.
Probably do it hungover.
You could do it hungover.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you can't even face a hangover in your 40s.
No, stop drinking years ago.
Yeah, exactly, because it's not worth it. But we're expecting our body to do this 9-month incredible process, then followed by you deliver and you're at the goal line. Of course, it's going to prepare and react differently.
It must have been so fascinating for you to go through 2 pregnancies and 2 births with this, with all of that knowledge. Like, what was
terrifying?
What was that like? What was your experience of matrescence, and was it what you thought it was going to be?
With my daughter, when I first got pregnant, I remember, like, day by day, I would be like, oh, the neural tube is forming. What do I need to be eating? Or I'd be like, you know, all
you knew too much.
I knew too much. It was a bit much. But I loved it in a lot of ways, and I did so much reading about the things that our bodies need at those individual times. And to this day, it surprises me so much that we don't just simply prepare women. We tell them to take prenatals, but we don't prepare them for, like, the individual nutrients that protect you and baby and can have lifelong consequences as a result for your health and theirs by simply just taking certain nutrients. And and the devastating consequences of lacking them. So actually, in my second pregnancy, I was B12 deficient. And I couldn't, but when I started to read about what that meant for me and my baby, like babies can have, you know, lifelong neurological deficits as a result of a simple B12 deficiency. And I remember feeling so angry, like, how did I let this happen? And thinking, like, why was I not screened on day one for every deficiency? But we don't. And that to me is where we can really move the dial on changing different maternal outcomes, is simply better education and access to testing.
Well, it's the testing, isn't it?
Access
to testing is one thing, like, oh, I need B12, but
how do you know whether you're going
deficient?
To be over it, taking
yeah,
it or not?
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's a big move for us, is now all the nutritional deficiency testing.
Oh, that's exciting. And what was it like becoming a mother for you? You started the business.
I incorporated
when you were 7 months pregnant.
No, when I was 3 months pregnant.
3 months pregnant.
And you know, when you look back on that and you think, how would I even consider doing that? But in a weird way, I'm reading more and more about mums who start businesses when they're pregnant or postpartum,
yeah.
because there's a strength that kicks in.
Oh, that was my experience.
And this is, again, this unquantified strength that and change of mentality that you have, this ruthless prioritization. Like I used to call my due date my deadline. And everyone's like, you got to stop calling it your deadline. And I was like, oh, this is the mother of all deadlines. But I got shit done
yeah.
as a result of knowing that was a deadline I could not move. And everything thereafter, you have this ability to prioritize like nothing else. Like I've always said, I'm a last minute person. I will work through the night to get something done. But with this, time is not on your side. And so you just get things done. I think you befriend good as opposed to just longing for perfection. And that is a really healing thing to a certain extent when you're somebody who always wants perfection.
So true. I also think, you know, the brain changes in matrescence where we sort of essentially go from thinking more about me to thinking more about we, right?
Yeah.
I think that's why so many businesses like yours, like mine, do get started.
Yeah.
Because you look around and you're like, why is no one doing this? I did the same with Mothercard. I was like, why is no one doing this?
Why is no one doing this?
And you kind of go, okay.
But your eyes open to the world in a different way because you're no longer looking for just yourself. You're no
that's
longer
it.
A selfish person. And that's not a bad thing.
I was selfish before. I'm going
to
say
it's just a term for who else did you have to look after, really? Like you were driven by your own needs.
Yeah.
That's a natural human thing. But when you have a child, you are driven by their needs and their needs come first. And so it's against everything in our bodies when it says, like, fix your own oxygen mask first. But actually, it's because now all of a sudden you need to let something else survive. And that opens your eyes up to a whole other world. And as a result of that vision, you're not just seeing the world through a child's lens. You're seeing the world through that future child and how you will never let them go through what you went through. And so that makes you fiercely determined to change the world for them and to change the world for all of the other people that you now see too who are mothers.
What do you want for our daughters? What do you want them to never go through that our generations have?
I never want them to go through the idea that they have to prove themselves 10 times as hard as their male counterparts just to be taken seriously. I never want them to have to prove that they need or are worthy of medical attention. And I never want them to be in the dark about the most profound weapon. Weapon is probably the wrong word. It's like a magic power
yeah.
that their bodies are, whether it's feeding, whether it's nurturing, whether it's birthing. I want them to know the power of their bodies.
Some of the things that I learned about feeding I was like, how on earth is this real?
Yeah.
That my nipple, based on my baby's saliva, yeah. will change the consistency or formula of my milk for what they need. I was like, that's some sort of woo-woo voodoo.
This is it.
Magic.
This is it. It's weird. Like everyone says, like, are you religious or spiritual? And I'm like, I believe in physics. and biology.
I think that makes you spiritual, by the way.
100%, yeah. Because there are so many things yeah. that you cannot explain.
Yeah.
You just have to trust. And like, even when I look down the microscope, I'm like, just bigger than us. When you see something so incredibly complex inside one single cell and you're like, human eye can't see this.
And yet here we are, right? As mothers going, oh, I feel so guilty. I'm not good enough. I can't do it.
And yet your body is adapting.
And yet we're incredible.
Without doing anything. It's the one thing, and I will say this about becoming a mother. Every other part of my life I worked for, studied for, like endlessly devoted myself to learning a craft, learning a theory, a process, you know, whether it was in the lab or in the library. And becoming a mother, every skill I had was innate to me. And I think so many mothers drown out the fine tuning of what their body is telling them to do, whether it's menstruation before they come pregnant or whether it's during pregnancy, like the smells that all of a sudden we know we're in danger or that we shouldn't be eating or we shouldn't be around, like that hypersensitivity that you smell things. It's your body's way of saying, do not eat that. Do not use that product. Get out of here.
It's, is it?
Yeah.
Is that why you I can't stand perfumes?
Yes,
exactly. They were like,
poison.
What's the word?
Endocrine disruptors.
Is that real?
Yes.
What?
Of course. It's why you eat
so
random things your body is needing.
So my body is smelling a strong perfume and going, don't go near that person because it might disrupt your hormonal.
Yes. But imagine tuning into this incredible signal and then postpartum where you have like a letdown, where you have, you know, just this need for nurture. It's just the most innate knowledge that you have. And yet we're never taught it.
What are cravings?
Cravings are your body's desire for nutrients that you don't have. That's why some vegetarians end up eating meat during pregnancy because they're like, need that iron.
I tell you, I had that. So I sadly miscarried and we were on holiday and we got back to the airport and I was actually in a wheelchair because I was so weak and faint and I hadn't eaten meat in quite a while. And I said to my husband, I was like, you need to go and get me a red, barely cooked hamburger. And he was like, but you haven't had hamburger. I was like, don't just go. And I devoured it. Yeah. It was like
something bigger than
something
you.
Bigger than me.
Yeah.
So how do we start then to tune in better to what our body's telling us? Because I think the other side of that I hear, particularly if people are trying to get pregnant, is like the anxiety and like, oh, there's a twinge. Oh, how do we do it where we're like listening to our body, but we're not becoming sort of anxious with every twinge, especially if you had like me where I had my first amazing kind of dream pregnancy, dream birth, then had two miscarriages, yeah. then got pregnant. And it was very difficult for me I couldn't actually have that same ease that I had with the first because every twinge I was like,
yeah.
I would hold my breath.
Yeah. And I think that's the hardest thing. And where I actually get angry that we know less about miscarriage than we do about Mars. One in four that we know of will have a miscarriage. And yet you're just told, well, another one might happen and another one might happen. And after that, we might investigate. And I think that there are so many things, especially when we look at the studies that are coming out about the role of sperm health in placental formation and therefore miscarriage. And that sperm with higher DNA damage, just poorer quality sperm, is linked with higher rates of miscarriage. That makes me want to start a revolution where I'm like, you know, we say about women who are doing everything to just be my body is a temple and their partner is not doing anything and they only have to show up once. You have to carry for 9 whole months and everything after. And so I think that is something we need to learn more about, is the role that sperm is playing. But so much more research is needed on this. But we also need collectively to speak to each other about when it happens. This idea that we don't tell anyone about a pregnancy till you're 12 weeks actually just means that...
Do we know where that came from?
It comes from the fact that there is such a high incidence of pregnancy loss in that first 12 weeks, because I think it's why you don't get your first scan till 12 weeks. There is such a high rate of pregnancy loss for many different biological and genetic and chromosomal reasons. But as a result of that secrecy, it means that you don't get the support.
Well, you go through one of the hardest things that, you know, it's very difficult often without the support of your, or it's such an awkward conversation. It's like, I didn't tell you I was pregnant, but I've actually lost a pregnancy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so awkward.
Yeah. It's just, we need to do more.
So with sperm health.
Sperm health. It's a big one. So all of our eggs we're born with, right?
What do the men need to be doing?
So little to improve their sperm health. It's not even funny. So I guess this gives us an idea of baseline health in men, that just eating a handful of walnuts every single day can improve every single parameter of sperm health, from the concentration, motility, morphology, how well they swim. Every single parameter is improved if you just ate a handful of walnuts, get your omegas in. Obviously reducing smoking, vaping, drinking, trans fats, all of those things. But while that seems like such a, you know, a generic piece of advice, you only have to do it for really 3 months, right? The life cycle of a sperm is 3 months.
I didn't know that.
You are constantly creating new swimmers as a man. And so if you made those changes just for 3 months, your sperm health is so radically improved. And you can go back to what you were doing if you've, you know, got on your conception journey, but just make the effort for 3 months to improve every single parameter of your sperm. You can actually predict when a man is going to die based on his sperm quality. So we know that men with lower sperm quality are more likely to die earlier than men with high sperm counts and high sperm quality. And again, we tend to think of sperm as being just like a biological output, an ejaculate. But actually, if your overall health is poor, so too is your sperm health. So what I said about how our bodies will stop us releasing an egg if we're under stress, if we're not well, if we're sick, that's why you skip your period sometimes when you're sick, if you're not eating well enough. The same happens in sperm, whereby you're really not putting out good enough sperm to procreate because your body is actually just not in a healthy state.
And the eggs, the opposite, right? We are born with all of our eggs.
All of our eggs.
And I just love thinking about the fact that I carried my grandkids.
Yes.
Half of my grandkids.
Exactly. Exactly. It's incredible. But as a result, everything that your mother ate, everything that you've gone through,
affects two generations.
Yes, exactly. So if there's a lever to be pulled here on in terms of improving outcomes for fertility, the easier one is definitely, I don't want to say to pull because it's too visceral of what we're talking about, but the easier lever to pull is definitely on
Give
the sperm
your
side.
Give levers a pull.
Yeah, it's on the sperm side, not on the eggs.
I think that, I mean, that alone, just that message is just phenomenal, isn't it, in terms of the impact that it could have.
But I also think we've become so angry about the use of stress as being an explainer for infertility. So people are like, do not tell me to calm down. Fair. Do not tell me to just relax, not think about it. Fair. But actually, putting yourself in a position where you say, I will actively acknowledge what cortisol does to my body, and I, where possible, will do anything in my power to remove that and avoid it, is something that we should all take into account. Because when we think about stress, I always say with our endocrine system, that's your hormone system, the system that is constantly creating these chemical messengers to have all of these profound consequences on our bodies. They are not things that happen just inside your body. These are things that your body will react to a visual stimulus. So you see something, you get a fright.
Yep.
Imagine your heart racing because you've seen something or someone. If you hear something, a loud bang, and you're like, oh God. So a visual stimulus, an audio stimulus. But even then, a feeling in a place can have that same profound consequence on your bodies, where it kickstarts an adrenaline reaction.
Wow.
Just being aware of our environment, whether it's the people you're with, how they make you feel, whether it's the work, whether it's your work environment, and understanding that that is actually constantly having a role on this beautiful orchestra of hormones that are trying to play. Being mindful of that is very important in terms of the role that stress plays on fertility and ovulation.
Do you think that's why you hear these stories? And obviously it's not everyone's story.
These are my favourite stories.
But you hear some stories where people have tried for a baby for years, and then they might say, let's just have a year off.
And they get pregnant.
And they get pregnant. Is that the cortisol?
This is my biggest obsession, is that unspoken relief. So our biggest reason for people buying a fertility test when they're actively trying to conceive, our biggest reason for a refund is they've gotten pregnant that month. So these are people who have been trying to conceive for up to 5 or 6 years. They buy a fertility test and they get pregnant that month. Because some part of them has outsourced the worry. They've done something. It's no longer on them. They've said, right, I want to check my fertility. What's going on? They buy a test. They relax. They get pregnant. So I'm like, we're getting people pregnant even without doing the tests. But that to me is amazing.
But it's so difficult, isn't it? Because I completely understand it, that when you've been desperate for a baby, and I think, you know, I remember it, you know, when I was trying to, we were trying to have our second and I'd had these two miscarriages and everyone seemed to be pregnant and I was just, I could feel the stress in my body. Yeah. And if someone would have said to me, just relax and let it go, I would have punched them.
Yeah, 100%. They would have deserved it.
Yeah.
But it's about telling yourself that message. It's almost like you have to it's like being tickled. You can't tickle yourself, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Only someone else can do that to you.
Yeah. So you have to tell yourself.
You have to tell yourself. That actually, and it's so hard to do because you can't tickle yourself. You can't just tell yourself to relax.
No.
The trust has to be outsourced.
It's true.
Yeah. I had a call with somebody who'd been trying to conceive for 3 years and I just walked through her medical history, walked through her partners and I was like, you're going to be fine. Like I knew her, I was talking through her blood results with her.
Do you feel confident to say that?
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, because she had her fertility results. She told me through her partners and I was like, do you know what? She took me through her life. And I said, tell me what's happening in your life. They were couch surfing while their house was being done up. And I was like, do you know what? You're not in the environment physically, mentally to do this right now. I said, as soon as you are in your place, then you can go for it. And she rang me a month later. She's like, Helen, you're not going to believe it. I'm pregnant. And so she's due in November and I'm so excited. But they tried for years. And she said to me, your phone call was like a hug. And it meant so much to me that like, that you know, you could
I wish everyone could phone you up. I know. Just have access to you.
I know.
Oh.
But that's why we created Hertility. Yeah. So somebody can reach help and know that that help has been created by women, by scientists, clinicians, by people who care.
With all that love infused, I'm into energy. It's like love is infused into
it. Oh, it's infused from our customer service to our clinical team to our, everyone is building. We're like probably 90% female.
Yeah.
Probably the only company that needs more white men. but everything as a result, everyone brings their journey into it, whether it's product, whether it's engineering. We bring, okay, has anyone ever asked about this? We need to ask about this. And we bring that into it to try and make it for every single woman.
Oh, it's just amazing. It is amazing. Quick fire questions that aren't very quick fire.
Hit me.
What's something that you used to value before motherhood that you no longer do?
Oh, that's... I've actually gone blank on that one. Hang on a minute. Let me think.
Come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
What, if your first time pregnant self was sat where I am now, what would you say to her?
Oh, God, I've got goosebumps thinking like you're about to make the best friend of your life.
Oh.
Yeah.
Motherhood is teaching me ...
everything that I need to know. I just need to listen to her.
And what, you're gonna make me cry now? And what's one gift you would give to all mothers in the world and why?
Oh, it's probably the same. It's a microphone to listen to their own internal voice and to know that they're right, because we are born, like from an evolutionary standpoint, with a ruthless need to feed, nurture and love our babies. And we have so many voices that drown out the voice that we need to hear, whether it's like, don't let them fall asleep on the breast, don't let them do this, you're making a rod for your own back. And all of those things ultimately drown the noise that you need to hear, which is that very fine-tuned evolutionary ability to know what your child needs.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Do you want to answer that one?
What was it again?
You used to value, you no longer do.
God. sleep.
Yeah.
God, I survive on so
We both were up at 4, weren't we?
4:44. I was like, what is this hour? Yeah, I literally get in and
sleep. My 10-year-old woke me up at 4 and then I was like, coming here. So I was like, might as well just get up.
Yeah, may as well just get up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You just, I guess you appreciate the little things, right? Mm. You know,
like a warm drink.
Yeah, it's so funny. I had to go to A&E last year. I will not go to hospital unless there's a risk of death. I thought I had a deep vein thrombosis because I sat on a long flight with a fat baby on my lap. And yeah, that can happen. So I went in and my sister messaged me and she said, are you okay? I'm so worried about you. You're in there on your own. And I was like, it was a hot day. And I was like, I'm in the air conditioning. I've got my laptop. I'm plowing through work. I'm in my element. And she was like, your bar is so
so true. When people are like sitting in the cars like a spa break, I'm like, it is, and it's not a spa break. And I'll pass you.
Exactly. It's not that you lower your standards, you definitely learn to appreciate the little things
true.
In life.
It's so true. Where can we learn more about Hertility?
Follow us. We are a small company. We are, you know, working through both maternity leaves to build it. All of our babies, we work through our maternities to do it. Hertilityhealth.com. And follow us on socials, LinkedIn. Just engage with us. We are humans behind every post and they're carefully crafted and curated.
These are the companies that we need to be investing in, supporting, build. Like, these are the companies that are going to change.
And we need help, because every message that we have is being shadow banned. Every word there is to surround womanhood, motherhood, women's health is being shadow banned. So we need to rise together and support each other.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was the episode. I hoped you loved it. If you did, please make sure you subscribe, and I will see you next time.